Thank you for organizing this event, and also Dan, and just before I start, I've been sort of interested in the Middle East for a number of years, worked with the Fellowship of Reconciliation in Nicaragua, and basically then in the occupied territories in Gaza and Israel, and was there most recently in the incursion, so-called incursion invasion in last spring that the Israeli army did. I was in Iraq in 91. We were sent with the FOR team to extricate, remember when Saddam was holding the hostages? There were six Americans who weren't doing well physically and mentally, so we were asked to go over and get them out and bring them home. So I got to see a little bit of Iraq in 91, just before the first slaughter, and then got to see it sort of firsthand for the month of February and early March this year, because I was there with the Iraq Peace Team under Voices in the Wilderness. And I just want to, before I go into some comments about that, I want to just speak to some of the things these wonderful panelists have said, because it really caused my antenna to sort of go up. Sylvia talked about discrimination. And the thing that came to mind was how we had a situation in the East Bay that was very clear in the area of Walnut Creek. And so we went door to door to people in the community and asked them, would they join us in trying to make sure that the discrimination that was hitting the newspapers against a group was not going to happen. And then a number of us, right after after 9/11, called the church out in Concord that had been vandalized. And I mean, when I say a few, there were over 400 people who called and said, how can we help, and do you need vigil, people out there 24 hours a day, we can do a rotating thing on the street. So you wound up bringing community people together who know that that's not what this country is supposed to be about, and you address the folks who might want to cause some difficulty. So it's just going door to door, getting on the phone, saying, here's what's happened, can you help, and we need bodies. Because I agree so much with what Zulfikar said, I think. That, you know, we have to deal on some local level as well and really address the inequities anywhere we see them. So that was one thing. The second thing on the tax resistance, I wanted to echo what Susan said, because during the Vietnam War we had, oh, there she is, I had Vietnamese kids who were paraplegics who were brought over by the Committee of Responsibility, and they had been bombed by U.S. bombs. And they were brought over here for surgeries, and so this grew. I was able to declare the kids dependents, and I wasn't legally, but I did. And then it gave us a chance to raise the issue of the war in the courts. And eventually we lost, but it did give us a wonderful opportunity to use the system to try and flush out the truth of what was going on. And there was one other thing. When the war was over, a lot of us still felt, my God, our money, you know, if you read Thoreau, how can we spend money this way? Allow our money to do what we're not doing, you know, from capital punishment right on out. So I declared $6 billion dependents. Think about it. The world's population is dependent on us, the United States, not to pay our taxes because we're the ones destroying the world. So it seemed totally logical to me. Now, granted, it didn't seem that way to the courts, but it's worth thinking about, trying to think about creative ways, and I'd echo what she said about using the telephone taxes, just a you know, get your feet wet idea of just withholding that 3% and sending a letter every month with your bill saying, you know, what we're doing are criminal acts in the world and I don't want to help with that. Then, let's see. Oh, what Phil said was, you know, the cost of the war, not just in terms of our souls, it's $1 billion a week. $1 billion a week. And when we were in Iraq, Mr. Blix and Mr. Baradei were there. They came because the U-2s were going to be off the ground, remember? So we thought, okay, we thought there was still a chance. We thought the war was going to happen in February, and we were there in February, but then we had that little opening. Baradei told us that the cost out of the common coffers in the United Nations to keep the process of the inspections going, and all they needed was 4 more months, but the whole cost of the inspection process was going to be $94 million out of a common coffer. The world's, you know, the UN fund. It's costing the United States taxpayers $1 billion a week. And according to Byrd, Senator Byrd, and to Senator Leahy, the cost is going to be minimum $250 billion US. So even if you didn't give a rap about the thousands of Iraqis that have died, or the Americans who've come home in body bags, or the depleted uranium and the cancer that the Iraqis are going to have for God knows how long after this. Well, I worked in a hospital there, and cancer went up 700% since 91. We dropped 300 tons of depleted uranium in those bombs. And it's close to 800 tons with this war. And you get it by breeding it. So imagine the Gulf War Syndrome guys coming back, and women who've been breathing that all around Basra and every place else we dropped it. So the cost, you know, if nobody that you speak with cares at all about the Iraqi people, bring it home in terms of their dollars. And then the final thing, I want to really echo what you said at the end. I am so hopeful. I cannot tell you. Honest to God. And you might say, well, how could that be? I lost my wonderful friend, 13 years old, was blown to bits in that apartment house. See, I go around with a slideshow called The Human Face of Iraq. And I'm trying to do it all over the state. And I've lost personal friends there. And my Iraq peace team is still there, by the way. There's members of our team still there. Let me just go back for a second because I don't want to miss this. One might ask, well, what does the Iraq peace team do now? Well, we have two things that we think. Number one, what you see, it depends on where you stand. So there are a number of countries in the crosshairs of the U.S. military. Iran, certainly this week. 2 weeks ago was Syria. Next week it'll be North Korea. And God knows who else, right? Cuba, probably. It's hard to keep up. But the point is, what the Iraq peace team is going to do now is to have teams on the ground in the countries that are definitely in the crosshairs for the U.S. next. So that means an Iran peace team, a North Korea peace team. People to report from the ground and serve to accompany the people going through the horrors of U.S. imperialism. But there's also, I think, a very important thing that's necessary. In order to avoid the next war, we have to tell the truth about this one. And that is what a lot of us feel is very important. So our job in this room is to do the hard thing, which is to speak to people that it's not so easy to speak to. Some of us have relatives and friends who are not comfortable with when we bring up the issue of the war and its cost, and maybe the fact that not only did we not win, the world lost. So, you know, trying to stretch where it's a little bit more less comfortable to speak with people that aren't on the same track, because I think that dialogue's important if we're going to get our country back. And last, somebody, I think it was Phil, who said, oh my God, what if we had 4 more years of Bush? Well, Bobby Seale, when he was in prison, Nixon was reelected, and the guard came up to Bobby Seale and said, oh my God, this is great. Nixon was just reelected. We've got 4 more years of Nixon. And Bobby Seale said, yes, but he's got 4 more years of us. So it's good to keep that in mind, even if we don't pull it off. That work is valuable. And we came this close to stopping this war. This close. I have to tell you, the world is different. Whether we stopped it or not, it can't. I don't think the world is ever going to be the same. And you know what's hard? American audiences don't see it because of your limited coverage here. But let me tell you, the American and the world community reached right over the tops of their governments and grabbed hands with the Iraqis and each other all over the world. People came to Baghdad. Now, you know, it's against the law for any of us to have traveled to Baghdad. We have the possibility of a 12-year prison sentence and a $1 million fine. And we had to fly to Jordan first and then get a truck, you know, or vehicle before 13 hours into Baghdad. Folks, the Japanese rock group got on a plane in Tokyo, flew to Jordan, and then drove the 14 hours and played rock concerts in the streets of Baghdad night after night to give heart to the Iraqi people. The Swedes, the Italians went to the bridges. I've got photographs of all this. And sang arias on the various bridges. Depending if you wanted to hear Rigoletto, you went to the Alfanur Bridge. If you wanted to hear Aida, you knew which other. What I'm and an Italian couple, and I'm not even talking about the human shields who got in buses and just took off to head down to Baghdad. An Italian couple who took their rent, their money, their car money. I'm sorry, their retirement money. She was 72, he was 76. Took their retirement money, bought a truck, put in Italian, Baghdad or Bust on it, put their St. Bernard dog in it, 2 of their nephews accompanied them, and they drove 37 days through Western and Eastern Europe and over the snowy passes of Turkey and drove into Baghdad to be with the Iraqi people. And their dog had a huge sign on it. So help me God, I swear, I have the picture of this. It says dog shield. Because you know who the human shields were. So what I'm saying to you is, our job is to keep our hearts up and to keep this vision of hope and what our country can be, that dream that Martin Luther King had of a fair, just, and decent society. And I feel Americans, for the most part, want to be fair and decent. They do not want this criminality going on in their name. So our biggest assignment is to keep our own spirits up, and then to carry that vision, speak with people that it's harder to speak with, and just work our butts off. And you know, the good news is we're not going to die of boredom. So